One second, we're not going to go on just yet.
Blog Talk Radio.
Give us a little spiel. All right, you guys ready?
That's right.
Ready as we'll ever be. We'll give it a shot.
There you go. We'll try. You know, that's all we can do.
We shall try.
That's
we shall try very hard. Happy birthday, B, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news in the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Morda.
All right, guys, we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Show, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it right here. My name is Eric Lortha, and I'm here with my co-host Joe Habib and our special guest today, Lee Groves from Ring Magazine, Ring TV. He's been the author of books, CompuBox, everything. The guy does it all, Lee Groves. Lee, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. If you guys want to call in and ask questions, 323-870-3857. And tonight, we're going to talk about we lost a boxing legend this week, man, Mills Lane. Mills Lane, great referee. We'll talk about him. But first, we're going to get started with the Beeb. Beeb, happy birthday, my man.
Thank you.
You thought I'd forget, didn't you? I actually did forget. I got to be honest here. But happy birthday. How old are you?
53.
Good Lord.
He doesn't look 53, does he?
53.
He doesn't look a day over 61. I'll tell you that right now. What did you do for your birthday? Anything special?
Went to the Chinese buffet.
Hey, that sounds like a good birthday to me.
No, right. My friend took me out the Indian food, actually.
Nice. Very nice, man. All right. Well, good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Hey, Clark has nothing on you, Beeb. Nothing.
That's right, man. He's ageless. The timeless Beeb.
Ageless.
All right. Let's get started here. ESPN Plus. The co-main event here. Teofimo Lopez versus Sandor Martin. 10 rounds. Junior welterweights. Teofimo Lopez defeated Sandor Martin via split decision here. 95-94 for Martin, 97-92, and 96-93 for Lopez. Look, man, Teofimo got knocked down in the second round. I think it was a legit knockdown. I know he was complaining about it. But let me tell you what, that seventh round, they called that a slip or whatever they called it. That was a to me, that looked like a legit knockdown, man. That was a knockdown. That being said, man, I did feel Lopez won the fight. I had it 96-93, or I think I said 96-93 for Lopez. I got to check again. I just thought he was busy enough to win a lot of those rounds. Don't get me wrong. I didn't like the way he looked. I don't think he's the same guy. I'm not sure 140 pounds is his weight, but I thought he did enough in, one guy was trying to dodge punches and countering pretty well, but the other guy was just throwing a lot of punches. And on the rounds that nothing really was happening, I think you have to give a nod to Teofimo because he was coming forward, he was throwing punches, he was trying to make the fight. At least that's the way I saw it, man. You and I talked about this last time. After the Kambosos fight, he came back, he had a good win. And we had a hard time explaining because he won literally every round, right? He won every round. And we said there's something missing here. I don't know what it is, but there is something missing from this guy, right? He hasn't looked the same since Kambosos' fight. He's not the same fighter. There's something wrong here. He's not the same fighter. After the fight, they gave an interview, and he said Martin ran the whole fight. However, he also asked his corner immediately after the fight, do I still have it? Listen, it's real simple. When you have to ask this question and you're talking about you, when I have to say, man, do I still have it? The answer is no, you don't. That's it. Lee, let me go to you first. What are your thoughts on Teofimo? What are your thoughts on this fight? And has he lost it? Is he done?
Well, he did win. I don't think that he's totally done, but you're right. He is not the same guy that looks spectacular in winning his first world championship against Richard Comey. I think that was also on a Heisman night. The guy who defeated Lomachenko, turns out Lomachenko was injured, but he came up with the 12th round that he needed to nail down that victory. He's not the same guy. You know, I think over the past few years, a pretty reliable indicator is that if his life outside the ring is stable, he performs well. But if it's chaotic, he struggles. And if the scene after the fight regarding his wife and his child outside the ring are any indicator, last night's performance was probably the result of the latter, because he made reference that the relationship between he and his wife was improving, which tells me that at one time it was not so good, that it needed to be worked on. And then, of course, there's the dad in the corner, who I thought did a better job this time around as far as giving instructions are concerned. But, you know, he's his father, and he's very A-type personality. He can't really relax. And so, I, you know, there have been calls for a new trainer to be put into the mix. And, you know, more and more, it's looking like more of a case of him needing a new voice in the corner. He's been hearing his father's voice literally his entire life, both in boxing and in life in general. Maybe they need a new, calmer voice to sort of add an element, another element to the mix that I think hopefully will allow him to channel his talent better than what we've seen the last few times. Now, as far as the second knockdown is concerned, it depends on the camera angle that you're looking at.
Yeah.
The first camera angle looked like it was a clean punch. The one that was up above made it look like it was a cuff and pull down, and he was off balance. So it's really a judgment snap call by the referee, and the referee called it a slip. But I agree with you. I had the fight scored 96-93 for Teofimo, simply because, one, he was the more effective aggressor. He was landing a lot of long right hands to the body. They were scoring. And it's very difficult for a visiting fighter to go to a marquee fighter's hometown and win a decision when you're throwing so many fewer punches and when you're backing up the entire time. I think Sandor Martin succeeded in making Teofimo frustrated and look bad, but he didn't close the deal because he needed to throw more punches and he needed to land more cleanly. He didn't do that. So if he had picked up his pace, he probably would have won the fight. If the fight was in Barcelona, he probably would have won the fight. But it wasn't, and he didn't, so we got what we got.
There you go. Steve, let me run to you real quick here. When we talk about Teofimo Lopez and him needing a new trainer, I was watching the corner last night, and I've seen this for a couple of fights now. I don't see any real instruction being given in that corner. I really don't. I see a lot of rah-rah stuff. I see a lot of speeches. I don't see a lot of instruction. And, you know, Teofimo's not really the kind of guy, I don't think, that needs to get hyped up any more than he is, because he already looks all like he's on edge. Steve, talk to me about what they should have done in that corner and what you heard in that corner.
Well, I think a lot of people talk about having a different voice in there. I don't think it would matter. I think the kid's stubborn. I think he's hard-headed. I don't think he listens. When you listen to him talk, particularly on that podium during the press conference, he's acting like he's the know-it-all. Like he's sitting there looking to his left, looking to his right, talking to the other fighters on the panel as if he's already made it, basically. Like he's that Sugar Ray Leonard, Floyd Mayweather level. Yeah, you know, just, you know, you guys, I'm going to let you know, like, this is what you need to do. It's not just about the fighting. He's more concerned about being a superstar, right, and looking exciting and trying to make highlight reel footage instead of just going out there and winning the fight. There's been times when, you know, Floyd Mayweather would have a fight and we'd be like, wow, that was a great fight. And other times we'd say, oh, well he won easy, but it wasn't the best aesthetically pleasing performance. You know why? Because Floyd Mayweather didn't give a shit. All he wanted to do was win, right?
Yeah.
And pleasing us was second, right? Teofimo Lopez is trying to look at this as purely entertainment. I get it. It is entertainment, right? But winning is always number one. Andre Ward would all, you know, you see, he sat there and referenced Tim Bradley and Andre Ward. We've seen Tim Bradley, you know, every now and then have a fight like the Provodnikov fight. But then we see him have a fight like the Marquez and Pacquiao fights where he was more tactical, right? So those guys did what they had to do to win, right? Teofimo Lopez is just thinking about how good I'm going to look. What are the fans going to think about me? Do I still have it? This is high-level insecurity, guys. And that's the problem. So I understand that his father's not the best coach in the world, but he's got to fix himself internally before he can even listen to somebody else. That's the big problem. And you know what's crazy? I had it 95-94 for Martin. I don't think Martin won the fight. You could argue maybe a draw. I don't know. But the thing is this. When you're setting traps and you're looking to suck a guy in for counters, right, and he's coming in, but you can't hit him with that one shot. So you're just sitting there flipping and trying to, like, reset and then go back in there and draw and set another trap there. So if the guy's coming in and you don't have the counter shot that you want, you should always just throw the jab out there just so you can make contact with them. You know what I'm saying? Don't look for the perfect counter. So there were times when Martin was just like looking for the perfect counter, throwing the one punch at a time. But in rounds 7, 8, and 9, when he started throwing the jab, that's when I started giving him rounds because he started popping the jab. So if you're going to suck the guy in and you can't time him and get him with the shot you want, always take, you know, flip off and just always flip the jab out there.
Like Crawford did last night.
Exactly. If you're not sure you can land the shot, and you're not, and the guy doesn't, you know, take the bait as you want him to, if you can't get that angle on that power counter shot that you're looking for, then you got to throw the jab out there and make contact so you know where you are and so you can kind of position him and put him where you want him to put him. That's what the jab is for. And I thought both men last night abandoned that jab, right? And Martin, like I said, in spots in that middle part of the fight was throwing it. And if he did that, you know, more frequently, he would have landed more shots. So
could have been a different fight.
You want to be the counter puncher. Okay. You got to do more than just try to like land that perfect shot when the guy's coming in. Mayweather was great at that. Like a lot of times he'd set traps and he didn't like where he was. So he'd throw the jab to the body. Like he'd always like jab, he'd just touch the guy, let him know you're there, and you can break his rhythm, and then you can freeze him with the jab, and then you can throw the counter shot. But if you're
very accurate.
Yeah, if you don't have the counter that you, like I said, then you got to throw the jab out there. And that's that. I mean, so he would be coming in a lot of times while he was in the corner, and he would and he, Martin found himself having to reset himself because, you know, he couldn't get that shot off that he wanted. And he was looking for the left hand. And he couldn't get it all the time. There were times when he can get it, the other times he couldn't. So when it's not there, you got to throw the jab.
All right, Tony AOS, do you think Teddy Atlas can help Teofimo? Absolutely. Teddy Atlas is the greatest trainer in history, in my book. Absolutely.
Teddy Atlas is a charlatan.
First of all, Teddy Atlas is not a charlatan. And I can't believe you're speaking like this on the show, speaking like this about Teddy Atlas, the greatest trainer on the planet. He runs a charity, Beeb.
Listen,
you don't run anything. He runs
Teddy
a charity.
Atlas,
he helps people.
Teddy Atlas, as the great Al Bernstein once said, never met a camera he didn't like.
Oh, how dare you.
As soon as he sees
how
the camera on
dare
him,
you.
All of a sudden comes out with these cryptic messages.
You know what?
Do you believe in magic? We can bring your father back here tonight, Teddy.
You know what? You know what?
We really can't.
I'm
going to
have Teddy on the show. Let me tell you
something.
I'm
going to
have Teddy on the show, and you're going to answer to him. You're going to answer to him, and you know what? You're going to fold like an accordion over there.
Never.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man.
Lee's thinking
this
about
is what
this.
I walked into.
You're right. Lee's thinking about this. You know, what have I gotten myself into now?
Yeah.
Hey, this ain't the round table, Lee.
No, it is not.
You're a professional here.
I actually worked with Teddy for a number of years when I was traveling with CompuBox, and we would do ESPN fights or whatever. He's very good at what he does. He knows how to motivate. He has a track record. He's in the Hall of Fame, for God's sake. But I think that he has just built a distaste for boxing because he's been betrayed by a lot of people. And he is a very principled, very intense person. If you're going to work with Teddy, you have to work within his umbrella and his rules. You have to be very accepting. And most fighters, you know, like Tim Bradley, who's just inducted in the Hall of Fame as well. He was under Teddy's tutelage, and he was very successful.
Until he lost and then blamed Teddy Atlas for the loss and then Teddy Atlas. Yeah.
Right.
Because then it's Teddy Atlas' fault. It's no longer Bradley's fault.
Definitely Teddy Atlas' fault, man.
Right.
It was
but,
not
but
Teddy
I'm
Atlas' fault.
He actually got the W,
I'm
and Teddy
Atlas too.
Wasn't there.
Michael Moore, son. Mike Tyson. Michael Moore. He is the trainer of champions, my man. Like it,
many,
don't
many
like it, but you got
to
appreciate it, son.
He lies to Michael Moore when he pulls out that brick of a cell phone and says that his son's on the line. That was a lie. You can't
did
lie
it work?
That.
It worked.
I thought
you caught Holyfield on the right night, Lee. I'm just being honest.
I'm going to tell you what. That speech that he gave, who was it? Was it Bradley?
Fireman?
That was
the corniest
brilliant.
Thing I've ever heard.
That was brilliant. Completely brilliant.
I don't know.
Completely
Lee.
Brilliant.
I think it was
You're the odd answer. Man out, son. Why you got to hate on Teddy?
I'm not a big fan of Teddy.
I'm a huge fan of Teddy Atlas.
It's your right to not like Teddy Atlas.
It's really not, though, Lee. You know, it's really not, though, because he's being intellectually dishonest is what he's doing.
I mean, I respect Teddy Atlas. I don't like
his style.
I think he's too theatrical, Lee.
No, he doesn't.
I think he knows when the camera's on him, and that's when he goes on those rants and you know.
Everything he does is for the fighter. He could care less. I really believe that he could care less. He
Eric,
likes to teach people.
Eric, come on.
He's a teacher. That guy is a natural teacher.
Eric, put the pom-poms down,
oh,
please.
Stop it. What's the matter?
This is horrible.
We are
What's
firemen.
That?
I'm trying to live vicariously through Teddy Atlas, all right? Be your own man.
I can't help it. I can't. Him and Eubank Sr., I can't help it, all right?
I like Eubank.
He's awesome, isn't he? Right? If you could hang out with anybody.
If I could hang out with anybody.
It would be Eubank Sr. or Vinny Paz. Either one of those two. That's it.
Did you see Eubank Jr. at the press conference with Liam Smith? So he has this KFC jacket. He has this Kentucky Fried Chicken jacket on, right?
Okay.
And he's like saying he's sponsored by Kentucky Fried Chicken. And Liam Smith is sitting there talking, like getting mad at him, saying, "Oh yeah, you think you're a superstar? You think you've done everything in the sport of boxing?" And then Chris Eubank Jr. turns around and goes, "I don't think I'm a superstar. I'm just a guy with a KFC jacket trying to make a living." It was hilarious. Chris Eubank Jr. is hilarious.
Awesome.
He is so funny.
Real quick, just quick answers here. Does Teofimo Lopez beat Ruguru, Pro Grace?
No.
I don't think he does either.
No, not this version of Teofimo.
No.
The better version of Teofimo, we don't know if he's going to come back.
Donnelly.
But that version of Teofimo could compete with Regis Progre. Regis Progre is the real deal.
Do you think 140 is his correct weight, or should he go back down? What should he think about going back down?
Teofimo?
Yeah.
I don't know if he can. He should, but he probably can't.
Yeah, that's true.
He's 26. I think he's 25 years old now, and he's – you know, he's maturing into what he is going to be. Now, I don't know if we have seen the best of what Teofimo has left. That remains to be seen. But it doesn't look good right now.
No, it sure doesn't. So now let's talk about the main event of the card. The main event. And, you know, I love Top Rank, and I love what they do with Ohio fighters. The main event last night, and it did not disappoint. Jared, Big Baby Anderson versus Jerry Forrest. Jared Anderson completely dismantles Jerry Forrest. It took Anderson only two rounds to get the hardest punching heavyweight Jerry Forrest out of there. Like I said it before, Jared Anderson is the best in the heavyweight division. He's the best heavyweight out there right now. Oh, I didn't know if you guys know this or not, but you guys know he's from Ohio, right? Number one. Speed, the hardest punching hitter in the heavyweight division, Jerry Forrest, got obliterated. Obliterated, son. He's the real deal, right?
I think he's a good fighter, man.
Took out Tyson Fury. That's the rumor. Took him out in sparring. That's why he canceled. That's why he canceled that second Deontay Wilder fight, or that third Deontay Wilder fight. He got taken out in sparring, son. That's the rumor. Big baby.
Yeah, but you started the rumor.
Doesn't matter who started it. Listen, the rumor is there.
The rumor you started.
Doesn't matter. I heard from my people.
You have a bias. I don't know if we can take your opinion seriously. But, Jared Anderson, man, that's a guy who has self-awareness. He's a humble guy. He knows that, you know, he's confident, but he's not cocky. You know, he knows that, he's a young guy in the division. You know, he respects, you know, the elder statesman in the division. Like, he never talks trash about any of the OGs like Wilder or Fury. And he knows that his time will come. And he's just climbing the ladder right now. He's following the blueprint that's laid in front of him. And when it's all said and done, when this era ends and his era begins, he could definitely become world champion. He definitely has that ability. He has the athletic ability. He's smart. He's got really, really good instincts in there in terms of punch selection and timing. He's quick, and he's athletic. He's got good footwork. If there's one flaw, maybe sometimes the defense can be tightened up a tad bit, but that's all going to come with experience. And as the opposition gets better, I'm sure he'll raise his game. You know, maybe he hasn't even shown us everything he has right now, so maybe there's more to come. But just by looking at the eye test, there's a lot of potential here, and I'm excited and looking forward to this guy moving forward.
That's
our question.
And B, by the way, Boxing Pound for Pound Jack says, if you want a rumor, ask why Anderson didn't fight under the Fury's undercard for the white fight. Listen, you beat up Fury too many times, you lose your job. That's the way it goes. Lee, tell us about it, baby. What do you think of Jared Anderson?
You know, when I size up how far prospects may go ultimately, I see whether they maintain their previous level of dominance even as the quality of opposition gets better. And Jared Anderson has certainly been doing that. I think of all the prospects that we saw last night, Anderson did the best job of maintaining that dominance. The top-ranked people thought, I think, that Forrest would be that guy who could take Anderson some rounds. He's a southpaw. He fought draws with Michael Hunter and Jay Lee Zhang. He went the distance with Carlos Takam, and he lost a decision to Jermaine Franklin that many people, including me, thought that he should have won. He hadn't been KO'd in more than 9 years, you know, so he's got a track record of durability. And that knockout was a two-round knockout against Gerald Washington, who made some noise in the heavyweight division. He's a pretty good puncher. But what Anderson did in the first round, what was it, 54 total connects and 39 power shots? The average heavyweight throws 44 punches around. Anderson landed 54 punches. So it's off the chart, absolutely off the charts. And then, of course, midway through the second round, he took him out with a pretty savage punch. You know, you knew that Forrest was finished. And, you know, as I was watching this, I was trying to think of a suitable historical equivalent to what we see in Anderson, who I think should change his nickname from Big Baby to A-Train. You know, Big Baby's already taken. He is the Jared A-Train Anderson. That has a nice ring to it. So The best I could come up with is the very best version of Riddick Bowe, right? They are of similar size. Anderson is 6'4", Bowe is 6'5". Anderson has a 78.5-inch reach. Bowe had an 81-inch reach. And Anderson weighed 239, and Bowe was 235 on the very best day as a pro, his first fight with Evander Holyfield. Both have a sense of humor, and both are versatile fighters. You know, Bowe is a big guy who could fight on the inside, had those uppercuts. Jared is a true switch hitter. He can hit with power on both sides. So you could say he's even more versatile than the best version of Riddick Bowe was. So I just get a similar vibe with Anderson and the best version of Bowe. But the difference is that he seems to have his head on straight.
More discipline.
And more discipline and more self-awareness. He knows where he's at. He knows where he's going. He has the right team behind him to guide him toward that eventual goal. You know, we the only thing that we don't really know about Jared Anderson is that we don't know how he is going to react when he's under true duress. He 13-0, 13 knockouts. He's totally steamrolled his opposition. We don't know yet how his chin is, how he reacts when he's buzzed, how he reacts if the fight is trending negatively toward him. We don't know those questions yet. I think we will in the future, maybe in the next year to 18 months. But if he is truly as great as he looked last night, if he continues that through the championship level, I think he's rated 20th by the WBC right now. So he can be called a contender. He'll probably break into the other ratings very soon. He's now past the prospect stage, I think. He is a guy to watch at world level. And he is fun to watch. And he is a guy who could – he is a heavyweight who could throw a ton of punches. He scores knockouts. He is box office. And you can't really ask any more of a heavyweight, especially in America, than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not to mention he's from Ohio. Title bound, baby.
Sort of West Virginia, by the way.
Please.
Virginia.
Please, can I ask you a question about the – not to change the subject, but the whole Teofimo thing with not being able to bring his son into the ring. Why did they not let him bring his son into the ring? Because we've seen many times, like, fighters always bring their kids in the ring and they hold them and stuff. Why weren't they letting him bring his son in the ring? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I think that might have been the mother's decision. I saw a clip of it, and that's how I interpreted it. It may have been totally different there.
Yeah.
But, he reached down, I guess, to gather up his son, and the wife said, you know, no, I'm not.
I saw the security. I saw the security put their arm up saying no, and I'm trying to figure out why they didn't let him do that. Because I've never seen that before, because you always see fighters bring their kids in the ring.
I don't know. I remember in the days gone by, there used to be an age limit at Madison Square Garden where you could watch boxing. I think it was like 15 years old or something like that. But yeah, you've seen fighters have their infants in the ring in their arms. Maybe it's just a security guard's personal choice. I don't know.
Maybe it's a New York thing now or something. Maybe because I don't know.
Maybe.
Or could have just been the model.
But that struck a little bit strange to me. That's all.
Yeah, it's weird.
There you go. Xander Zayas also on the undercard versus Alexis Salazar. Zayas wins 80-72 and 79-73 twice. I thought Xander looked good here, man. I know the announcers were criticizing him at times, but I thought he did very well. I thought he broke Salazar down. I thought it was a one-sided fight. Lee, what were your thoughts on this one?
You know, I think of the A-siders that fought last night, aside from, you know, I think that Zayas had the best step-up opponent in terms of a guy who was able to administer the sternest test. And who had the most skills. Salazar had a record of 25-4 coming in. He was an experienced guy. And not only did he say before the fight that he came to compete, he came to win. He said he wanted to win, and he fought like a guy who wanted to win.
Yeah.
He always had a reply when Zayas turned on the jets. He bounced back nicely after that but for the ropes incident that some say should have been called a knockdown. And he went to war with Zayas in that first minute of the eighth round where they really went at it, you know. He was competing all the way. And the fact that Zayas still won 80-72 makes him look even better because the other guy pushed him so hard. I'm sure the folks at Top Rank are very happy this morning because we got to see a little bit more of what makes Zayas tick beyond just the great physical talent. When he needs to dig, he digs. And like Anderson, we still have to have the questions answered about his chin and how he reacts when things are not going his way. But this was a very nice step up for him. And, you know, he's still, what, 20 years old? I mean, he is years away from his physical prime. I see him eventually getting up to middleweight and super middleweight before all is said and done.
Scary, man. Steve, what are your thoughts on Alexander Zayas?
No, I think people want him to be like this dynamic type guy, and he's more of a meat and potatoes type fighter. You know what I mean? He's more of a technical guy. He likes to break you down. He likes to set the shots up. He's not that you know, explosive type one punch knockout guy. He's not a guy who's going to be overly aggressive. He's patient in there. He's methodical in his approach. And like I said, this is a guy who's very mature and he's looking to win. He's not worried about, you know, being overzealous and trying to please the fans. He's trying to get W's. He's working on his craft. He's an excellent body puncher. You know, he's got a great jab. And he's a guy, like I said, who sets the shots up. He varies up his punches. You know, he doesn't go in there and just wing it. Doesn't go in there and say, well, this guy is not a threat to me. This guy can't hurt me. I'm just going to go in there and barrel my way through and be irresponsible and just stop throwing haymakers. You know, he's not like that. He's not like a Berlanga who's just going to throw those haymakers thinking he can get everyone out of it. This is a guy, like I said, is mature. He wants to hone his skills. He wants to get better because he knows that, you know, at any given time, these guys are a threat. And when I, you know, up the level of opposition, I'm going to have to be disciplined, right? I can't just go in there and blow people out. So I think he fights every fight as if that he's got a killer in front of him. And I think that's a great approach.
And from here on in, he's probably going to meet guys who have the mindset of a killer.
Yeah.
So that comes in handy. That fight last night came in very, very handy for him. I think all the fights last night were nice developmental fights.
Exactly. The Keyshawn Davis, Juan Carlos Burgos, Davis won 80-72 on all three cards, which I thought was a pretty good win for him. I mean, going eight rounds. Young guy, and he's good, man. He's definitely got a future in front of him, that's for sure. Very good fighter, man, very good fighter. ESPN earlier in the day, I believe it was earlier in the day, Michael Conlan versus Kareem Guiferi. Conlan wins by first round KO. He did what he's supposed to do. The guy was 38 years old. Kareem Guiferi was 38 years old, excuse me. Lee, I'm going to ask you real quick, does the rematch with Lee Wood happen?
I hope so. I think in many people's minds that is still the fight of the year, and it certainly was one of the endings of the year. My goodness gracious! But I think a lot of people expected Conlan to win the fight. Of course, it was in Belfast, where he is 38 years old, as you said. I don't think anybody expected him to score the win so quickly. Because he does tend to go rounds in his fights. I really think the star of the show last night was his body attack. Michael Conlan's always had a very good body attack, but this time, I mean, a body shot made Guerfi double up, and it ignited the final attack that closed the show. He threw like 10 or 12 or 14 punches, and he just slumped to the canvas. Referee looked at him, stopped the fight. Conlon is currently in the bottom half of the top 10 of all the Alphabet organizations. This performance is going to get him closer. And it is interesting, though, that he is now fighting exclusively out of the southpaw stance. He's been doing that the last few fights. And I think that was at the suggestion of his trainer. One thing that I see that is a little problematic is his stance. His stance is extremely wide. And, you know, he's fairly tall for his weight class. By making his stance so wide, he makes himself a little bit shorter than he needs to be. And he's a little less mobile because of it. But since Conlon has this deep amateur pedigree, he's still got the fast hands. He still has pop. You know, I really do hope that they make the rematch with Lee Wood. And hopefully it will be for the full WBA title, because I think that Leo Santa Cruz's last defense of the full WBA title at 118 was almost 4 years ago. And that's longer than Ali's exile, by the way, which should put that in context.
Yeah.
Have they stripped him, or is he still the full champion?
I don't know.
I think he's still the full champion. I'll take a look.
Yeah. Let's talk about the pay-per-view on Black Prime. It was Terrence Crawford versus David Avanesyan. It was also on DirecTV and stuff like that, so I imagine the pay-per-view was everywhere. If you didn't get, like, Black Prime, you can get it somewhere else. You can watch it on your provider or whatever. Terrence Crawford wins by KO in the sixth round over Avanesyan. This was just a demolition by Crawford. We all know Avanesyan is a good fighter, but Crawford is still on a different level. In the sixth round, he caught him with a left-right combination. The right hand connected flush. Avanesyan didn't see it coming. He was out cold. Speed, is Errol Spence next?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, come on.
I wish he was. I wish he was, but I don't think so.
What were your thoughts, Lee, on Terrence Crawford? Do you think Errol Spence is next?
Sure hope so. I really do. I think a few hours before the match, I put out a tweet that indicated that because of all the disappointment surrounding this match, all the talk of Spence versus Crawford, and then, so far, it went so far as having a date and a site tentatively announced and then only to have it snatched away. I think that besides winning, Terrence Crawford's objective was to show everybody that at age 35 and more than a year out of the ring, he's not yet past his best or close to his best. And I think he did that, especially, after that final combination, left uppercut to the jaw, right hook, and it just put him flat on his back. I think overall he showed that he still has the speed, he still has power, he still has his ring intelligence and ring generalship. But the image we have of Terrence Crawford is one of an all-around fighter, right? But now he has scored 10 straight knockouts, right? And this is a streak that goes back to July 2016 when Victor Postol went the entire route. So that's 6.5 years. That's a heck of a knockout streak. So now that Crawford has shown that he still got it, it's up to Spence, whenever he fights next, to show that he still got it. And if he does that, then that will give the Spence Crawford fight the necessary legs to at least generate part of the excitement that it would have if the fight had been made for this past September as it should have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Beeb, what were your thoughts on Terrence Crawford last night? I mean, did he look any slippage at all?
I thought he looked phenomenal. And they were saying that there was a little bit of ring rust that he got. I mean, he got caught with a couple shots, but not. I mean, he was rolling the shots. It wasn't like he was, getting hurt or anything like that. I thought he looked phenomenal. I thought he was switching up a lot. I thought he constantly, gives different looks in there. I thought he was on his game. I thought it was really good. The body work was incredible yesterday. And you know what I saw that he did last night? to me, he looked like he made a concerted effort to fight deep inside the pocket up close. He looked like he wanted to fight him on the inside. And it's almost like he was preparing himself for an Errol Spence fight. He fought Avanesian, to me, the way he would, you know, try to fight Errol Spence. Because Errol Spence is definitely a guy who's a master on the inside, loves to go to the body. So I think Terence Crawford was fighting as if, you know, he had to do that against Avanesian. He's preparing himself for that type of fight, you know, the fight that he had to fight with Spence, you know, with Avanesian. So I think he was working on that as if he was, you know, preparing for that. So I like what he did in there. You know, he took his time, but then again, you know, when he wanted to, you know, switch the gears and put his foot on the gas pedal, we saw what happened, right? So I thought he did a great job. I thought he did a great job.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that he was fighting as if he was preparing for Errol Spence. One of the criticisms of Terence Crawford is that he was very sparse with his work rate. Spence is known for his high work rate. And last night, Terence Crawford averaged over 100 punches a round, and mostly because of that setup jab that he was throwing. I think almost 70% of his entire output was those jabs. And it really did a good job of keeping Avanesian at arm's length so that he could set up, so that he can establish his preferred range and set up his power shots. So now he shows at age 35 that he could keep up a high work rate. I think that makes people rethink how he might do against Spence, whether he could do the same thing against Spence. Certainly made me rethink things.
And you mentioned the jab too, Lee. And if you notice, even when he was stepping back and resetting, he was jabbing. He was still jabbing on the way out. So he was very consistent with that jab. Whether or not he was stepping in with it or moving out and resetting, he would throw it on the way out. And a lot of guys don't do that. So that's what, like I said, perfect example. That's something Martin should have done when he was stepping back, but he didn't do it.
And he probably would have won the fight if he had just kept his hands busy.
Yeah, that's what he needed.
Yeah. Just a jab, just a jab, really.
Anything,
something.
Because in those moments when there's downtime, and you got the guy coming forward, then, you know, you got to touch him.
And that guy's throwing punches. He's coming forward and he's throwing punches. Whether he's being effective or not, he's coming forward. But the other guy's not throwing anything. He's waiting for counters. He's biding his time. Again, if he would have just had that jab out, that could have been the difference in a fight, man. Could have been. You know, that guy's kicking himself this morning. He's got to be kicking himself. No question.
Yeah.
And as far as that pay-per-view goes, I'm more interested to see how many people watched it, how many people actually paid for it. I think that's going to be the thing. I can't imagine.
It was on YouTube.
I can't imagine it was many.
It was on YouTube this morning on like 10 channels, and it didn't get taken down.
Highlights were all over TikTok and Facebook, everywhere like that, you know.
They got to learn their lesson with these pay-per-views, man. They got to figure something out.
And that card was a drizzling you-know-what. That card was not good at all. That undercard, I didn't think was great. Lee, agree, disagree?
I was intrigued by that 387-pound heavyweight, how, you know, he actually fought a little better than people thought that he would. We've seen guys of that size, and we usually know what happens to them. This guy actually hung in there and landed some shots and showed a little bit of skill. I think he earned some more paychecks down the line.
Was that a functional 387, Beeb? Was that a functional
387, man? The functional 387.
All right, let's talk about the zone card. Josh Warrington versus Luis Alberto Lopez for Warrington's IBF title, and we have a new champion. Luis Alberto Lopez beats Josh Warrington 114-114 and then 115-113 twice. So majority decision coming his way. Beeb, Warrington, what are your thoughts, man? What happened?
I think Warrington goes into these lulls in fights. And he gets frustrated when he has to hunt the guy down. He's not always great at cutting off the ring. He likes it when a guy comes to him. And even in the Kid Galahad fight, when someone uses that in-and-out ambush style against him, he has a hard time dealing with it. He wants someone to just stand there and trade with him in the pocket. And if you don't stand still for him, he has problems. You know, and I just thought Alberto did some good work. I thought his movement was really good. That was the key. Just not standing still. Every time he would land a shot, he would move, take that half step off to the side. He would even when he was moving back, once again, another guy who was using the jab in various different ways. And I thought that, you know, Warrington was being outworked. I think he was being out-jabbed. And a lot of moments in this fight, he was chasing Alberto down, and he just couldn't catch him. You know, I thought that he made a little run in the later rounds, but then again, in the 12th round, Alberto came back strong. It was a close fight. I had it 7-5. So it was a very, very close fight. But Warrington just came up a little bit short here. I don't think you can maybe make a case that he won, but maybe a draw at best. I don't know if you can make a case he won. One judge added a draw. I think that's probably the best you can do for him, as crazy as that may sound. This isn't one of those fights you can say it could have gone either way. I thought that, you know, there was at least 6 to 7 clear rounds that Alberto won. And I don't think that you could say Warrington won clearly 7 rounds. You're being objective. So I just think that he got outworked, he got outmaneuvered, and he was just a step behind, for a great portion of this fight. You know, he rallied a little bit. He did rally a little bit. He became a little bit more aggressive. But then, you know, Alberto made the adjustment again, and then he finished the fight strong. So I thought he pulled it out.
So, Lee, did the right guy win?
Yeah, the right guy won. I think the flow of this fight was very similar to the Estrada Chocolatito fight last week. You had one guy get off to a very good start, dominated, built a mathematical cushion, and then the other guy comes back and he sweeps the late rounds to make it close, but it was a matter of too little too late, and that's what it was with Warrington. And, you know, the Mexican fighters are revered because for many reasons, but one of the reasons is their skills travel well. And in recent years, they've been very effective going to Great Britain and upsetting the apple cart against the British favorites. And Lopez has done it now twice. He did it against Isaac Lowe, and then now he's done it against Warrington. The key to the fight was his start. You know, he has this unpredictable, wild style where he kind of like Julio Cesar Martinez during the best days of his reign. Very mobile, very unpredictable. The patterns are hard to identify and to defend against. High work rate, builds up points, has good punch. And that's what he used. A lot of the smart people thought this was a very dangerous fight for Warrington, even in Leeds, where everything is stacked in his favor. As far as Warrington is concerned, I see him as a classic overachiever. You know, he has this bulky upper body. He's not a big puncher. He's not especially skilled, but he is very rugged. He's kind of like a pocket Gene Fulmer in that respect, very much a pocket Gene Fulmer. Gene Fulmer's a Hall of Famer. But Warrington has that ruggedness about him. He's got that wandering head that has opened more than a few cuts on his opponents. And this is a guy who's been through the mill lately. He was knocked out by Mauricio Lara a couple of years ago. He got a technical decision in the rematch due to headbutt. And even though he regained the title against Kiko Martinez, he suffered a broken jaw in the process, and he had to lay out for more than 8 months. And now this. You wonder where he goes from here. I really don't know. But I, too, had the fight scored 7-5 for Lara. He just he did what he needed to do. And congratulations to him, man. He is now world champion. And, hey, what about a fight between Lara and Lopez. Why not have that fight?
I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, should be good.
It, man. That's it. All right, guys, let's go. That was it for the DAZN card. Let's go to the upcoming fights.
Whoa, Ebony Bridges, what's up?
What? What are you talking about?
Who's on the schedule?
Oh, give me
Shark,
a break.
Shark Dunn O'Connell, baby.
Oh,
Shark O'Connell.
Jesus. Yeah,
come
listen,
on,
listen. I do have some news on that because I think Ebony won. I'm not sure. I didn't see the fight.
She did.
Okay, I'm assuming that she won then. You're right. Let me tell you this, though. Ebony is now on OnlyFans. I don't know what she's charging, but trust me, I'm paying it, all right? Listen, she announced it. That's the big news. I don't care if she wins or fight Lou. Who cares? You saw her at the weigh-in. She was wearing lingerie. She had a big announcement, and her big announcement was she's going to be on OnlyFans now. Beeb, I can't wait. I'm going to put my money down tonight.
$12.99 a month right now. It's on sale.
What's that?
$12.99 a month. It's on sale.
Listen, whatever she's charging, it's not enough. All right? I'll just say that. I'm on there.
Please.
I'm on
Please.
It. Tell you what, while you two talk about the fight, I might just go ahead and log on now.
Come on.
Babe, you actually watched that fight?
Great fight.
Was it?
Very impressive.
It? I don't know why. Let me tell you this. Listen, and I get criticized for not taking women's boxing seriously. I don't see guys, I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't see guys posing in Playgirl or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, when
because
you show up in the weigh-in.
Because women don't really go for that.
I don't know that. But they had a magazine for a number of years. Somebody was buying it.
They're not there anymore, I don't think.
Beeb, are they there anymore? You know about that.
Playgirl magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you still read that, Beeb? You don't read that anymore?
Come on, Eric. A family show here. You're killing it.
I'm just saying.
That is a family.
Lee, let me tell you what. Lee is about to be blackballed by everybody he knows now. Teddy Atlas, all those guys are now going to blackball him because he's on the show now. Watch. Lee, you got no friends left. We're it now. That's it.
What can I say?
Is Ebony Bridges a serious fighter, Lee?
A serious marketer. She knows how to market herself, and marketing is a big part of today's boxing scene. If you want to break through, you got to market yourself, and you got to give Ebony a lot of credit for knowing how to market and maximize herself. And as far as this fight is concerned, the storyline of this fight is very similar to what her fight with Shannon Courtney was. Courtney objected to the way Ebony markets herself, and I think Shannon O'Connell called her a skanky stripper or something like that.
Not far
and
off
so it was a battle of philosophies. You got a serious veteran 39-year-old fighter who's gone through the ranks, got to all the way to number one, and she's challenging for a championship, I think, for several times. And there you have Ebony Bridges, who's coming off the best performance of her short career so far. And O'Connell actually staggered Ebony in the first round. She stumbled. But Ebony collected herself, scored her own knockdown, and scored the eighth round TKO. So good on her. You know, there's more to her than just the pretty pictures, you know.
I mean, she was 39.
Yeah, 39. Ebony, I think, is 36.
That's like fighting your grandma. I mean, she was 39. She's almost that.
39. Yeah, and she looked every bit of 39, but that was because Ebony was putting some punishment on her.
Fast pace of a fight for her, Lee.
It was too fast. I mean, Ebony puts in the work, apparently. You know, you have to put in the work to keep up a pace like that. And the real, like I said, there's more to her than just just what you see on the scale. She's competed in Muay Thai, kickboxing, karate. She's got a black belt in karate. She was a competitive bodybuilder. She has a bachelor's degree in math. She finished in the top of her class when she got her master's degree in teaching. And she speaks three languages reportedly, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. And she's proven that she is a whiz at marketing. And, you know, you could see that. So I think that she's earned the right to market herself any way that she wants to. And apparently this OnlyFans is just the next step in that marketing process.
I mean, but let's be honest here, Lee. I mean,
I don't know how long she's going to be a champion, though.
She's a teacher and she's got a math degree. Let's face it, anybody can do that. I mean, anybody can do that, you know. I think, you know, my wife is a math teacher. She's got a math degree. But, I mean, literally, you know, I think anybody can do that, you know.
Very hard, Eric. Come on.
Beeb, are you buying her OnlyFans?
Lee just read off a great resume. So my response to that resume is this. With all of those great things, why do you have to do the other stuff? That's my thing. You can do whatever you want, but what's going to happen is when you market yourself in a particular way, you have to deal with the repercussions of the way you market yourself.
That's it.
Unfortunately, I tell people this all the time. You know, when women sexualize themselves, they're going to be getting attention from men. But is that attention the attention you want? You want a lot of thirsty guys chasing after you, right? Is that the type of attention you want? Are these people actually going to respect you, or are they just giving you attention because of how you look? Are they just sexualizing you? Are they objectifying you? And you're basically objectifying yourself. So if you're selling sex, then that's going to take away from all the other things. If that's what you're putting, it seems to me that you're going out of your way to put that out in the forefront.
Yeah.
So people are going to look at that first, and they're going to always ask that question, well, what about the other stuff?
She doesn't make mention of the other stuff either, to be fair of that. She doesn't make it. You know, I had to research that to find that out.
Yeah, in my opinion, I don't think she needs all the other stuff. So I think it kind of takes away from the boxing.
It does. It does. I'm sure that she weighed the pros and cons, and she knows what she's doing, and she knows what she's going to get. I think she sees her performance in the ring as her answer to all the critics. And because she's still winning, she feels that she's on the plus side of things. But there's going to come a time, and it already came against Courtney, where she fought most of the fight with a horribly swollen eye. It swelled shut. It was almost Basilio-like. I don't know how long she's going to be a champion, but she is a champion now. She's aiming for unification fights, and we'll see what happens down the road. She is 36. She is on the chronologically anyway, the other side of the mountain. But you know, time will tell. I think she knows what she's been doing and what the ramifications are, and that's all that can really be said about that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you guys. I had no idea Mrs. Lortz listens to this podcast. She usually doesn't, but apparently tonight she tuned in. And I want to address this comment on the screen right here. It says, we don't care about her degree. What is her OnlyFans talking about? Ebony Bridges. That is not the kind of thing we support here. I just want to let you guys know that I know I'm watching you. This is not Beeb, and I know you agree with me here. Nobody here cares about her OnlyFans. I'm not going to buy it tonight. No way. I am not going to buy it. I'm just saying, and I think it's trash. Just trash comment. I hate that. No.
I heard Robbie subscribe to it, though.
Well, you know Robbie's going to subscribe because you know how he is with, you know.
You know Robbie.
The sexist, what he is. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
Robbie likes that. Robbie loves that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He definitely subscribed to it.
No. Not on this
but
channel.
But it's great. She performed, and that's all you could ask of her inside the box.
No, it was a great performance. She's going to perform on OnlyFans, too. I'll tell you that. Because I'm not paying for anything less. All right. Fight's coming up. December 13th. Tuesday? Yeah, it was Tuesday then. At 2:30 a.m. in Tokyo. Pete, it's at 2:30. So what is that? Then the main event's got to be close to when we're getting up for work and stuff.
like yeah. six.
Yeah, it's got to be right in there. So we'll be able to watch it, you know. Nayoa Inoue versus Paul Butler, 12 rounds for Inoue's WBC, IBF, and WBA bantamweight titles, and Butler's WBO bantamweight title. The unification's on. Nayoa Inoue, man, this is a good fight. This fight should have taken place in England. I really believe this fight should have taken place in England. I don't mind if it's in Tokyo. He's going to sell out the Dome. I get that. It would have been nice to have this fight in England, man. That would have been nice. So
England can't have everything.
You can't. But, yeah, it's a good fight. It's a good fight either way, man. I do like Inoue. Beeb, who are you liking this?
It's an automatic Inoue here. I can't see Butler winning this fight in any way. I can't see it. I think he's gonna get stopped. It's gonna be an early night, man, really. No disrespect to Butler. I just think Inoue's that good.
Is the over under actually 2.5? I heard it was 2.5.
2.5?
I'm not sure. I heard something to that effect.
Wow.
But one of the most beautiful words in boxing right now is undisputed. And we've had a run of undisputed title fights. And, really the monster is the monster for a reason. He is arguably the top pound-for-pound fighter in the world. He's number two on my list behind Crawford because of his offensive firepower. And... for Butler to win this fight, he has to be perfect. He's going to have to be on the move. He has to score enough clean punches to get the judges' notice in Japan. He's got to frustrate Inoue. He's got to be defensively on point. And he's basically got to do that for 12 straight rounds and make the case that he deserves to win. I don't see him knocking Inoue out. Decision is really his only route to victory, and it's got to be done perfectly. As for Inoue, Butler has to be perfect for 12 rounds. Inoue only has to be perfect for one punch, and he's got 36 minutes to do it. And I think he's going to do it. It's going to be fairly quick. It all depends on how quickly Inoue figures him out. And once he figures him out and once he hurts him, it's over.
Inoue is a very underrated counterpuncher too, because if you go back and look at the Nonito Donaire fight, the last fight, he knocked him out with a counterpunch. Caught him coming in. And Nonito Donaire was overly aggressive in that fight, and he got sucked into a punch. And Inoue was kind of laying back a little bit, being a little bit less aggressive than letting Nonito come to him.
The fact he had him scouted in that second fight, the way he scouted him,
was
brilliant.
Yeah, it wasn't even remotely close to the first fight. Like, he figured him out, like you said.
Yeah, for sure. December 17th in Las Vegas on Showtime, Michael Rivera versus Frank Martin, 12 rounds lightweights. Jose Uzcategui versus Vladimir Shishkin, 12 rounds super middleweights. And that'll be on Showtime, and that's it. That is it until December 31st, and every year in Tokyo, they always have the fights in Japan on the 31st, whether it's MMA, it's usually boxing and MMA, and they're big events. So, yeah. So, there you go. Let's go to the phones here. Let's go to 917. 917, New York, you're live.
Yeah, it's me, Eric Joe. Very nice to hear Mr. Lee Groves himself, bringing some talk, some very, informed and intelligent talk to a show that is in desperate need of it, especially tonight. Eric, you just insulted every teacher, okay, across this great country and across the world.
Are you a math teacher? Are you a math teacher?
I'm a PE teacher.
I insulted math teachers across the country. There's a huge difference. Huge difference.
Okay, on that much, I agree with you. Because, hey, I'm going to tell you, not everybody can just print off a master's degree and do what I do, Eric. That's a fact.
Well,
and I was here at the meme industry.
Different.
For class,
Let me tell you what you do is different than teaching math. I'll tell you that. You're molding lives. Math teachers, anybody can do that. I mean, come on.
I'm catching the divide and conquer strategy here. Look, when I heard it, I was here at the Beeb Industries holiday party slash a birthday party on my third plate of Chinese food, cheap Chinese food, I might add, and guzzling down my second Diet Cola. And I almost had to turn over the table. I mean, that was blasphemous talk, Eric, blasphemous. And I'm telling you, you're gonna be getting a letter from my union representative very shortly. I'm just letting you know. The U of T is gonna be on your ass.
That's where I'll be sleeping tonight and probably the next week.
Anyhow, I wanted to talk a little bit about the show at the Garden last night. I'm not sure if the Willy Wonka ticket was cashed, so to speak. I'm still trying to figure that one out, but honestly, this show should have been at the Hulu. It was sparsely attended in the lower bowl. The entire upper deck at the Garden was totally empty. And I don't understand why they put it in the big room at the Garden, to be quite honest with you. I thought that this was a Hulu theater type fight. And, you know, I think that one scorecard is really going to leave a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, not just Sandor Martin, but, you know, boxing fans in general, because it was so skewed. I mean, I just don't know how you could score the fight like that, regardless of whether a knockdown was missed or not. I just don't understand that scorecard, and I thought that said a lot about, you know, the intended outcome of that fight last night. You know, you guys were asking the question about the kid not getting into the ring. I think I've seen kids in rings before in New York. I just think that was the mom just not wanting her child to be used as a prop. And I can kind of understand that sentiment personally. Not quite sure what was going on there. But what was very disappointing, guys, is that I attended the post-fight press conference, and we were waiting and waiting and waiting for Teofimo to show up, and he didn't show up. You know, the other fighters on the main card were there, the winners anyway. So I'm talking about Big Baby Anderson and Xander Zayas and Keyshawn. But Teofimo didn't show up, and I thought that was a little disappointing because, you know, there were questions that I think members of the media wanted to ask. I think questions that a lot of boxing fans would want answered, and, you know, he didn't show up, so we're left to kind of ponder, you know, what was going on in the ring, where he sees himself in the sport right now. I don't know how you guys feel, but when you look at the top-tier echelon of the 140-pound division, I don't see him beating those fighters.
Not this version. Not this version. No, not against Pro Gray.
He may never be
champion. There's Pro Gray, there's Josh Taylor. I mean, even a guy like Liam Parra, who I thought was pretty impressive on his DAZN showing from a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, he was impressive. Zubriel Matias is impressive. You also got, you know, it's a stacked division.
Wait,
we could go on and on. You know,
yeah.
I don't know where he fits in. And what I wanted to ask Lee is, where do you see as his next step, Lee, moving on after this poor showing?
Teofimo? I think if Teofimo had his brothers, he would wait to see about the result of the Josh Taylor Catterall rematch and go for that championship. I think he's number one in the WBO already, and that would be a big money fight. And depending on how the winner looks, you know, especially if it's Josh Taylor, which you know, my gradually shrinking gut tells me Josh Taylor's going to win that fight. If he shows improvement, that'll be a very nice money fight because you got two big names. And boxing fans tend to have short memories in that regard. And if it's promoted correctly, I'm sure that they will get the house that they're looking for. But I think that the winner of Taylor and Catterall is going to be the next target. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, and especially if Taylor's up for it and stays at 140, I just can't see him beating Taylor. True. Even the Taylor that kind of struggled a bit with Catterall in the last fight, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw Pacquiao against DKU. I mean, to me, the Pacquiao that fought DKU would give Teofimo trouble. The Teofimo I saw yesterday, he was kind of trying to pot shot and feint his way to a knockout. And I just don't see that working at a high level.
Pacquiao still got it, man.
He still got it.
He was 160, right?
I mean, he kind of does, Eric.
Was he?
You know, maybe.
He didn't look 160. Maybe he won't.
They said he just I didn't see it, but they said he just toyed with that guy. They said he just completely
He literally toyed with him, Mary. I mean, but you could still see that. You could see that the speed and the movement and the power was still there. I mean, he wasn't even unloading on him with full power. And granted, obviously, this was an exhibition fight against a non-pro boxer, but I just was not too impressed by what I saw. As for Big Baby Anderson, I mean, you saw my tweet earlier, Eric. You know, why not Big Baby Miller? Why not the battles of the big babies, and you know, the winner gets to keep the name. I would go to that.
You know what?
I would go
I'll
to that
tell
fight.
You why. I'll tell you why. Because Baby Miller would test positive again, and he would be out of the fight, so nobody would be there to promote it again. So yeah, I wouldn't put Big Baby Miller in a main event anywhere.
I think he was over 300 pounds.
Oh, for sure, he was over 300. Yeah, he was definitely over 300. He looked awful his last time out.
It was functional, though. It was a functional 300 pounds.
Are you talking about the fight in Argentina, Eric, or the one in was it Romania or Hungary? Because he looked bad.
I don't remember, but yeah, take your pick. It was a functional 327 pounds, huh, Peeve?
You can't always go by what the number says on the scale. You got to go by what the guy can do, man. Numbers don't always add up, man.
Oh,
I mean, you don't look at the numbers. You got to look behind the numbers.
Stop it.
Remember, there's a copy box guy in the room.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Beans always going on about his copy box, isn't he? Yeah.
That's okay.
Last thing I wanted to ask about, guys, is Xander Zayas, who, you know, I talked about this with Kenny T on my show earlier in the day. There are people a little critical about him. I thought he did pretty well against a guy that was there to kind of give him rounds and be durable and a little bit tricky. My question is, do you guys see him as being ready for like an Austin Trout or an Erickson Lubin type opponent? I think the most difficult thing for Xander right now is that a lot of the marketable names at 154 are with the PBC, unless maybe you're talking about like a Liam Smith, and I don't know if he's quite ready for that yet. So what do you guys think is a good like next developmental stage for Xander Zayas?
I think I don't think he needs a big name right now. He's still developing. I mean, he's still developing. It depends on how fast. I don't want to see him pushed fast. I don't want to see him fast striked. I want to see him brought along the right way. I don't think he needs another name. I mean, he's durable opponents, but he doesn't necessarily need names right now. Late next year, maybe that's when you start feeding him a name or two. But right now, I like the way he's developing right now, and I don't think he should be pushed into a name right now. That's just my thoughts.
Not just yet. Maybe – I agree with Eric. I think they end at the end of next year that then you start stepping up the opposition.
Yeah, slow and steady wins the race, and he is only 20 years old. So he's got time. He's got time to develop. And he showed against a guy who was there, who was live, who was competing, that he could, even when the other guy turns on the jets, he has the jets to keep the dominance up. I think it was a really good teaching developmental fight. I don't think he's ready for the big boys yet. He doesn't have – Top Rank knows what they're doing. Two of their matchmakers are going into the Hall of Fame this year, and for good reason, man. They know how to build a fighter.
Yeah, 100%. I met Saul Colm already and Bruce Trampler last night. I guess the consensus is generally that Big Baby Anderson's kind of ready for a maybe ex, you know, fringe world titleist slash someone who's fought for a title, whereas for Zander, we still got to wait a couple years, right? Because that's kind of where I am right now with Zander, too.
You know why I put Big Baby in with next? Jermaine Franklin.
That would be a good one. You
think
he, what about Dubois? What about Dubois, Joe?
Yeah, he massacres Dubois.
I don't want to see Dubois get hurt right now.
Yeah, Dubois, who is Dubois? Is Dubois the guy?
Don't do it. He got up from 3 knockdowns. Don't use the keyword.
Is he the one that quit against the Juggernaut, right?
Just because you had to take the pie, please.
Man, I'm just asking
questions.
Come on,
he had a broken orbital bone.
Fractured in two places.
I know what he said.
Fractured in two places,
but, you know,
bleeding on the eye and nerve damage.
Listen, I didn't see any x-rays. I'm just saying. I didn't see anything.
I'd quit if I had a broken orbital bone.
You're not fighting for the title either. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, it's a big fight.
Please, Eric.
Do you think that Dillian White, I mean, I'm seeing people talking about Dillian White, but I just don't. A Dillian White that didn't want to take on Daniel Dubois, to me, is not a Dillian White that's going to want to take on a dangerous guy like Big Baby Anderson. I just don't see it.
And
I
think Anderson's the same way. I think he can get a couple more fights with just stiffer opposition, not necessarily name opposition, but and then he'll step up. But I think he's ready to step up quicker than Xander Zayas, for sure. I think that's what
you know
is.
Who was at the fight last night, Eric? Big Bag Zhang, the big Chinese heavyweight. He was at the fight yesterday. I don't know if he was doing any scouting.
Yeah.
But he was there.
He may be next to Big Baby.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
why is he here? But then that kind of made sense. I mean, he is based in New Jersey right now, so he's not that far from New York, but it did raise some alarm bells in my head. I'm like, oh wow, maybe Big Bang Zhang is a potential guy. Having said that, Colmo Reddy said they are not interested at all in the Cuban heavyweight Frank Sanchez.
Yeah,
the excuse he gave was that he's a boring fighter. He's going to stink it out and blah blah blah. But you know.
Yeah, maybe so, but
if anybody
listen,
can
man.
Make Frank Sanchez exciting, it's Jared Big Baby.
Yeah,
this whole thing about
Big Baby,
this whole thing about guys being boring. Well, make them not be boring if you're
right.
on the opposing side.
That's it.
You know, I get so sick of hearing that, man. Oh, this guy's gonna make it a stinker. Well, don't let him make it a stinker.
There it is.
Well, that's kind of what
all
Dale Beamer
right,
was doing, blaming for. Yeah. Sorry, guys. I've been on for a while. I'll get going. But thank
good.
You so
you're
much
good,
for
man.
The show. Yeah, thank
right,
you
thank
so much,
you,
guys. I'll continue.
All right. 530, Robert, ringside Robbie.
Hello, guys. Happy birthday, Joe.
Hey, what's up, Robbie? Hey, thank you, Robbie.
Yeah, look at that. Robbie wishes you a happy birthday.
Yeah.
And you wish nothing but bad things on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, how you doing, Robbie?
How's it going, Robbie? It's going all right. Yeah.
Did you subscribe to Ebony Bridges OnlyFans?
Fuck no.
Fucking, you're a liar. Mrs. Herrick told me she saw it on the credit card statement.
Now,
don't lie. You already subscribed.
Now, Joe, we
I
have
wanted
a guest.
I wanted to see if you were going to come
Joe,
clean.
We have a
I
guest
wanted to see
here.
If you were going to come clean.
We have a guest here.
I wanted
for
to see if you were
going to
come
on your
clean.
Best behavior.
Hey.
What do you mean we? You're not in the studio.
You
got
break.
The axe a couple years ago. What
give
do
me
you mean
break.
We?
What's wrong with you?
What do you mean we?
Be on your best behavior,
Matt.
Joe. Give me a break. Because he doesn't know any of the background story. You're making me look like an idiot, and I don't need to look like that.
Oh. You sound like that guy on The Godfather.
He made
me look ridiculous.
And I don't like to
look
ridiculous.
Give me a break. Leah, I'm glad you have the guts to hang out with these two.
Well,
I didn't know exactly what I was walking into, but I'm having fun.
Stop referencing LeRoy.
You guys get used to Lee Groves now because he'll never be on this show again. Trust me. I'm going to call him. He's going to lose my number and everything like that. You're like, Eric, who?
Anyway, let's
Robin,
let's
did you buy a pay-per-view last night?
Hell no. I didn't buy it.
No OnlyFans, no pay-per-view. I mean, what's going on here?
What are you saving up for, Robbie? A Sony PlayStation? Come on.
No. come on, Joe. I watched the ESPN card and I watched the DAZN card. I didn't need to watch that pay-per-view. So but,
and that was the problem with this pay-per-view card being where it was, right?
Yeah.
You were having it on the same night as Teofimo Lopez and a pretty stacked undercard, intriguing undercard, on a channel where you don't have to pay extra if you've got the subscription to it.
That's right.
You know, so that was a real challenge that it's going to be interesting to see what the final numbers are for that.
But apparently
Terrence Crawford is going to get his money in. We'll see.
And, Lee, I hate to disagree with you and Eric, but I agree with Joe. I don't think the Terrence Crawford Earl Spence fight happens. I think they're going to find a way to avoid each other. Because if they really wanted to fight, it would have already been done. I don't think it ever
happened.
Glass
half empty. Glass half. Me and Lee are glass half full kind of guys.
You know,
you and B are glass half empty kind of guys.
I really don't think it happens. And I feel bad for people like Jared Boots Ennis and Virgil Ortiz, the next group in line. They have to wait for these two guys to leave the division before they can get their just rewards.
That is frustrating. It really is. And that's sort of a byproduct of this era where you have the biggest stars fight only once or twice a year.
Yeah.
You have a logjam of worthy guys who are waiting in the background, and it's also in an era in which one bad loss could kill your career.
Exactly.
So you have to be very careful to walk that minefield.
But out of all the fights I saw yesterday, the two that need to make improvements, and I don't know in which way they need to make improvements, while I do think Teofimo Lopez does need a new voice in the corner, because ever since he's moved to 140, he's had two fights now, and he has not looked good in either one of them. And I'm sitting here thinking about trainers. You guys were talking about Teddy Atlas. Well, let's go with another New York trainer. Since Lopez is from New York, how about Buddy McGirt?
I love Buddy McGirt.
Why not?
Not a bad idea, man.
I love Buddy McGirt. He's the best.
Yeah.
Great.
Bring in Buddy McGirt, and if anybody can fix Lopez, it would be somebody like Buddy, if the dad will stay out of the way and let him do his job. If you bring in another voice like a Buddy McGirt, is the dad going to be too much of an interference? You got to consider that.
Was it JoJo Diaz's dad who allowed, I think, was it Robert Garcia to come into the camp and sort of work with JoJo? I think it's JoJo.
That's correct. It was.
He showed the humility to step aside and allow another voice to advance the career. And maybe something similar will happen here. Time will tell. We'll see.
Bill Haney does the same thing. He lets Shevchenko drink it.
Yeah. I was going to say Bill Haney's another one. He brings in other voices and allow them to work with Devin. I think Teofimo Lopez can get back to who he was, but until changes are made, he's not going to, because he won the fight last night, but he looked terrible in doing it. And another fighter needs to consider, I don't know what he's going to do with his career, is Josh Warrington, because this is twice now that he's went up against a Mexican, and he couldn't deal with a Mexican style of boxing. You know, he got knocked out by Laura, and he got beat by Lopez yesterday.
What are you going to use stereotypes for, Robbie? Why does it have to be a Mexican thing?
Because we don't lay down for anybody, Beeb. That's the way it is.
No. Because
why do you have to stereotype Mexican fighters, Robbie?
Joe, because Josh Warrington has been able to beat everybody else he's fought, but he's had difficulty with Mexicans.
Which says a lot of good things about Mexicans, by the way. Mexican fighters. They are revered. They are revered. They're the only country. You know, there's a Russian fighter, I think Evgeny Gradovich, that called himself the Mexican-Russian, I think, because they have so much respect around the world for the way that they train, the way that they fight, the way that they give everything. Mexicans deserve all the good things that are said about them.
Yeah, but Lee, I'm not be said like a bigoted. It's not. He said it in a bigoted way, kind of.
No, I did not. I'm not putting Robbie says a lot of risque things.
I'm not very politically correct. You know that.
I'm not putting Mexicans down. I wouldn't do that. Besides, I live in a state where there's way too many of them. I couldn't afford to put them down.
You think you can say stuff like that? The views of Ringside Robert do not necessarily represent the rules of Ringside Reporter.
No, of course I don't. I represent my own views.
Start digging before you speak.
Anyway, guys, have a good one. That's all I got for this week. See you later. And,
I don't blame you.
Good luck, Lee.
Thank you. Wow, he's a trip.
Exit stage left, will you? Get out of here.
I think I know what he was trying to say there, but he just didn't get it out proper. I get it.
I want to apologize to all the Mexican boxers and all the Mexican boxing fans out there for that.
And the Mexicans in a state.
That horrific speech.
And the Mexicans in a state, that's correct.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Lee will never be back on our show. I just feel it. It's like he's never coming back, so I'm just gonna lose my
No, actually this is fun.
All right, let's go to the news and rumors and then we'll go back to the phones here. Mills Lane passed away this week. Perhaps one of the best referees to ever do it, man. He had refereed hundreds of fights. Always no nonsense. To me, he was always fair. He's always the best. To me, he was always the best referee. When you saw Mills Lane in the main event, you knew it was a big fight. He just had that big fight feel about him, man. Guy was a former Marine, a judge. He actually had a 10-1 pro record before he retired. He started reffing, get this, to make money for law school. He'll always be linked with the Tyson Holyfield ear incident. And before that was the Bo Holyfield fan incident. I'll always remember him just for being a good ref. You knew when he was in the ring, he was going to call it down the middle. B, what do you remember most about Mills Lane?
Let's get it on!
I
like him. I thought he was a good referee.
I thought he was great, man.
You know the thing you remember about him? He was such a small man, right?
Well, he was 5'7". That's not fair. That's fairly tall. What's wrong with being 5'7"?
We had 130 pounds, Eric.
Duran was 5'7".
Yeah, right? Duran was 5'7".
He's 5'7", 130 pounds.
I think he was more like 150 or 60 pounds.
That's
actually
a lie. He was a featherweight when he boxed.
What, did you sneak in his bathroom and look at the scale? How do you know?
I'm an avid reader. But getting back to the topic.
Reader. Look at you.
So seeing this little guy reffing with guys that outweigh him by double his size, getting in there and breaking them up and come on, like, that, it was just amazing seeing how he just took charge of a fight and he wasn't afraid to get in there and stuff. Like sometimes you see referees, they're a little sheepish. They don't like to get in there and break. They're concerned about getting caught in a crossfire. This guy never cared. He just went in there. They put him in there in all the big fights, even though he was small. A lot of times they don't like to have small referees referee the heavyweights. They usually have a bigger guy. Like Ed Cotton, the big referee. They'd have big guys like that reffing fights, you know. Tony Weeks, big guy, over 200 pounds, right? But they would put him in there with anybody, heavyweight, lightweight, whatever, and he did his job. Did his job.
He never lost control of those fights.
No, never.
Never lost control of them. Lee, what do you remember most about Mills Lane?
Several things. One, his was a life that was defined by discipline and law and order. You know, he kept law and order in the ring, and he was a district attorney and a district judge. and he had a very good record as a lawyer. In fact, when I started writing full-length features for Ring Magazine in the late 80s, early 90s, Mills Lane was one of the early interview subjects for me. And he couldn't have been more accommodating and cooperative and helpful to a 23-year-old kid who was trying to make it in the boxing business. One of the guys that I interviewed was Jay Nady, who knew Mills well. And apparently he was as energetic about practicing law and order as he was protecting the rules in the ring. I think he said that there was one magazine profile of Mills Lane in which it was said of him that he liked putting away perps better than having sex. I think that's what the headline said. So that's dedication. So, but Mills Lane was, you know, he was no nonsense. He knew the rules. He executed the rules. He was a commander in the ring. And it really says something about the character of the man that when he had his stroke in 2002, his family was told by doctors that the best that they could expect is for him to live 5 more years. He ended up living for 20 more years. He was there at his 2013 Hall of Fame induction. You know, he had his arm in a sling and he couldn't speak, but you could just tell by his facial expressions that he was absolutely thrilled that he was being honored in this way. And, you know, he was one of the seminal referees of his time, of his era, if not of all time. He was a character of boxing. He is a character of law. And, you know, he had his own TV show, Judge Mills Lane, because of the way he handled the ear bite fight. He will sure, you know, he's been away from the scene for a very long time. But for those of us lucky enough to have watched him in action, and you young ones, you could watch him do his thing on YouTube. You could look up the Muhammad Ali versus Bob Foster fight, the only fight in which Ali was cut, Holmes versus Norton, you know, Hagler versus Mugabe, just a whole bunch of different important championship fights. And Mills Lane was the same all the way through. And that consistency and that consistent excellence is why he is what he is and why we remember him the way we do.
One of the best referees. Wow. No question.
He's in the Marines. He's in the Marines, too.
Yeah. Yeah, former Marine.
He's not a former Marine. There's no such thing as a former Marine. They will tell you that.
Former, what do they call it? They're not off duty, but...
just a Marine.
Yeah, just a Marine. There you go.
By the way, he took part in the 1960 U.S. Olympic trials, the same trials that
he did, yes.
A fighter named Cassius Clay, later to be known as Muhammad Ali, took part in.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Since we're talking about the Hall of Fame, this week we had some Hall of Fame inductees. Tim Bradley, Carl Froch, Rafael Marquez, all elected to the Hall of Fame. Lee, I got to ask you, do you get a vote for the Hall of Fame?
I do. I have been since 2001.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
You know where I'm going. I got to.
Go ahead.
Vinny Paz. Why is there no Vinny Paz in the Hall of Fame? Why is there an Arturo Gatti in the Hall of Fame and no Vinny Paz? Come on.
I thought you were gonna diss Tim Bradley, but go ahead.
I'll do that later. Don't worry about that.
Oh, okay.
One reason is perhaps I can only speak for myself.
Yes.
I can't speak for anybody else. But there was at one time when I became a voter in 2001, you had a maximum of 10 check marks in order. You can pick any of 10. And several years ago, the Hall of Fame reduced that to 5. You can only vote for 5.
Okay.
And because there's so many good names on the ballot,
yeah,
strong names, it has become more of an exercise of picking your top five of the names that are on the ballot.
Which is understandable.
And there's I think there's 40 names on the modern ballot, 40 to 42, 43 names.
You can only pick five out of 40?
You can only pick five.
Wow.
And Vinny Paz is one of them. Is Vinny Paz and his accomplishments in the top five of a field of 43? And not enough voters. Now, the top three vote getters, regardless of the vote total, the top three vote getters are the ones that get voted in. And Vinny has a hard road to hoe because while he has a case, you know, winning titles at 135 and 154, coming back from the broken neck, and beating, and I think he was he was down 2-1 in Greg Haugen to the series. He won a lightweight title. He was underrated hand speed and foot speed. He had world-class ability, and he had gargantuan fighting heart. However, he did have a lot of big losses, marquee losses. And if you're going to separate a top five, probably a lot of people looked at those losses and said, you know, maybe Tim Bradley is a better candidate. Carl Froch is a better candidate. Rafael Marquez is a better candidate. My beef is Darius Mikulchevsky. 23 title defenses at light heavyweight. 14 fight KO streak, the second longest in history in world title fights to Wilfredo Gomez's 17. He held the title, I believe, for 9 years. He was a three-belt light heavyweight champion before Roy Jones was a three-belt light heavyweight champion. He ran his record to 48-0 before losing his championship, I think, to Julio Cesar Gonzalez. He lost the last fight of his career. He ended up 48-2. He beat a lot of the same guys that Roy Jones did, and sometimes he beat them quicker. But I think he is not in because the voting pool is mostly from the United States. He was only seen on American television once when he beat Virgil Hill for two of the three light heavyweight belts that he won. So he had a very good record. He wasn't seen in the United States. He didn't go over and fight Roy Jones in the States because he made a lot more money over in Europe. And Roy didn't go to Germany to fight Mikulchevsky because he got robbed in Seoul and he didn't want to be robbed again. And during that time, Germany was rife with examples of fights that went to a decision, and probably Roy and Mikulchevsky would have gone to a decision. He didn't want to risk, I don't think, going over to Germany. And so the fight never happened. And Roy Jones, of course, is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Of course he is. But because Mikulchevsky did not get the chance to fight Roy Jones and be seen by the world audience, he was denied his best opportunity to be seen by enough of the voting pool in order to vote for him. And he's never made their top five. And so I think with his record and his resume, I think it screams Hall of Famer because to me, a Hall of Famer is a guy who exhibits long-term dominance and control over his era and his competition. And he also passes the eye test. He was a really good fighter. He's not Roy Jones, but he was a really good fighter. Yeah. So, you know, you got yours and I got mine.
That's right. You got it.
Lee, let me ask you two questions before Eric comes back in. Is Vinny Paz on the ballot every time? Is he on the ballot every year?
He is on the ballot. Yes, he is. Has been for several years.
What about James Toney?
He's in.
You think? Is he in?
Yeah.
James Toney is in.
Yeah. Okay.
He is in the Hall of Fame. Yes.
When did he get in?
Yes.
Last year?
He was in. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good. Because I know. I heard.
He is part of the trilogy.
I heard. I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but I heard one person say he shouldn't be in. And he said, I would never vote him in because of his positive PED test, whatever.
There are some voters who will have a hard line about that. But I think the fact that Evander Holyfield is in, the fact that Roy Jones is in, there's some, you know, questions about that. Klitschko, the Klitschko brothers, several others. I think that has pretty much been broken. You know, you could hold to your own personal beliefs, and that's your choice as a voter. But it's probably not going to stop the majority from moving forward with their vote. So, you know, neither here nor there.
Okay, so is Tim Bradley deserving of the Hall of Fame?
I personally didn't vote for him, but I could see why he got in. I mean, he was a two-time unified champion at 140. He was a two-time WBO welterweight champ. He beat Juan Manuel Marquez, probably the signature victory of his career. I think the fact also that, you know, he had a fight of the year against Provodnikov.
I thought Provodnikov beat him.
So, and he went over to England, and he won his first championship against Junior Witter, who is a very difficult fighter to beat. You can make a case for him. I didn't vote for him personally, only because he didn't make my top five, but I don't begrudge the fact that he is in. Why rain on a parade, right?
Right. Hey, that's what I say.
Are you allowed to say who you voted for, or does that have to be private?
Come on, what's the matter?
I mean, there are a lot of people who make their votes public.
You keep yours private?
Put them on the spot. There was a time, I could tell you who I voted for. I voted for Mikulchevsky, of course.
You did?
I voted for Mikulchevsky. I voted for Ivan Calderon, you know. I voted for Omar Narvaez because he is the only fighter in boxing history to have made 10 successful title defenses in two weight classes. He has 28 victories in world title fights, which is only second to Julio Cesar Chavez. Okay? Then you got Gilberto Roman. The excellent super flyweight champion of the 1980s, and Pongsaklek Wanchanjam, who holds the divisional record at flyweight, 17 consecutive defenses, I think 20 overall. So I went with longevity. I went with long-term success at the higher level. Other voters have other criteria that they use in order to make their vote.
It's almost like you went with guys who you felt were being overlooked but shouldn't have been overlooked. Is that a fair statement?
I thought, honestly, these were the top five guys on my list.
Fair enough.
I vote for the top five. I mean, there are several other guys that I really wish I could vote for, but because we only got five, you go with what you got.
If you had 10, would you have voted for Tim Bradley?
No. Would you vote for Vinny Paz if you had 10? Nobody cares about Tim Bradley.
Probably not. I'm not with Vinny Paz.
If you had a choice between Vinny Paz and Tim Bradley.
Five-time champ Vinny Paz and Tim Bradley, who didn't beat Manny Pacquiao, lost to him three straight times, lost to Provodnikov, lost to Diaz. Beat Marquez as Marquez was moving up. I mean, you know.
Devin Alexander.
Devin Alexander.
So who would you put in, Vinny Paz or Tim Bradley?
He just told you Vinny Paz.
I would probably put Tim Bradley in.
Right. He's making you feel better, B, but he just texted me Vinny Paz. That's what he told me. I'm just saying that's what happens.
Right. Andre Ward went in. He went in first time he was on the list, huh, Andre Ward?
He did. Yeah, he was the first ballot Hall of Famer. And I really do think that, you know, the records speak for themselves, but I think the visibility is there because they are there many, many times on ESPN offering their opinion. So,
is Mike Montero going to get up here?
Yeah. Montero voted for Paz.
Does he get a vote to vote people in?
Yeah, Montero, yeah, he voted for Paz. I told you.
He did?
Paz has a case because, you know, he is of the Rocky Graziano, Arturo Gatti, you know, Diego Corrales, you know, some fighters that Tony DeMarco got in because they were powerful. They fought hard. They gave everything of themselves. But I'm sort of a combination of eye test and resume. And, you know.
Who gets the vote? Is it the Boxing Writers Association of America that
full
votes?
Members.
All the members?
Full members of the BWAA as well as selected historians by the Hall of Fame. You know, you can write a letter.
Can Steve Kim get a vote?
I don't know. But you can if you feel that you are someone who can be an elector, you can write a letter to the Hall of Fame, to the screening committee, and explain why you believe that you can be an elector. That's what I did. Actually,
really?
I wasn't a writer yet. I was just a very knowledgeable fan, and I wrote a letter to the Hall of Fame. And the following year, I got my first Dear Elector letter.
When did you get that letter? When were you allowed to start voting?
2001 was my first year.
Wow, that's great.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
What an accomplishment that is. You've been doing it for 21 years, Lee.
21 years, yeah.
Congratulations.
And I wrote a series of articles, you know, how I voted and why. And I went into great detail as to why I voted for certain guys and why I didn't vote for other guys. So I haven't been doing it for the last few years, but, you know, so, but that's pretty much how I size things up. Everybody has a different way of doing things.
Yeah.
And that's just my way.
Are there any former fighters that vote that are on that list?
You know, there. I don't know that. I don't know, but I know that there. You know, in reaction to this year's class, there has been a call for, you know, managers, trainers, former fighters, or whatever, to have a bigger say as far as who gets in. I don't know about that. That's up to the Hall of Fame, but. As for me, fighters tend to gravitate toward those who fight like themselves.
That's excellent.
And they have their favorites just like everybody else does. And, I really don't know. I really don't know how to fall down on that. It's really a matter of individuals and whether they are willing to be fair and to be as objective as they can be. To sort of throw away personal dislike and just vote with your criteria. You know, stay true to what you believe a Hall of Famer is to be without bias or whatever.
Gotcha.
As best you can.
Excellent. Quick question, is Chris John in the Hall of Fame?
He is not in the Hall of Fame, but he is on the ballot.
He should be in the Hall of Fame. That guy was really something else, man.
Yeah. He really was. I think the big knock on him is his quality of opposition and the fact that most people thought he lost against Marquez.
I thought he beat Marquez. Yeah, I thought he beat Marquez rather easily. I was surprised on how that fight went, you know.
Yeah, there was controversy about it. But, Chris John has a very good record, has a very good record, like 19 defenses or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
a fighter.
It's just a matter of whether he makes a top five, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what it really boils down to. And some people don't vote for the maximum five. I think Dan Raphael was a guy who votes for one or two, you know. And that's his choice.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right. Canelo Alvarez. Eddie Hearn has been talking about him fighting John Ryder in May. So he stated, Eddie Hearn says the fight may happen in May. Beeb, you like the fight?
I don't hate it, but I saw this coming. I saw this coming like a year and a half ago. I still don't think he's going to fight Bivol. I don't even think he's going to fight him in September.
I think they should keep him away from Bivol. I really do. They should keep him far away from Bivol.
I knew this fight was going to happen about a year and a half ago. I was saying it. Even on the round tables, I was saying it, Lee, remember? But I just knew this fight was going to happen. I don't hate it. I think it's a good comeback fight. I think he kind of burnt himself out a little bit. I think he's getting, you know, had coming off some injuries, nursing some injuries, got some little niggles. So I don't think this is a bad fight. I think people will be surprised how entertaining this fight will be. John Ryder is, you know, his southpaw comes right at you. He's a good inside fighter. This could be a phone booth war between two guys who can fight very well on the inside, right? And then John Ryder will push the pace on Canelo as well. So people may look at this fight and say, I don't like this fight. Who's John Ryder? But they'll be surprised, I think, when they actually watch it. I think they'll be more entertained than they think they will be.
Yeah. 50-1 underdog? Is that what Louis Reyes just said? He's a 50-1 underdog? Does he have any shot here, Lee? Any shot at all?
As far as the announcement of the fight is concerned or that Canelo's part, it's not a big surprise. I think you have to go back to, I think he said it in September, that his recovery from surgery has gone better than expected, that the fears that he's going to be out a year are unfounded, his, you know, depending on how he does next month when he starts hitting things again. Yeah. He's going to take a fight in May. And he described that fight in May as, quote, not too tough, right? And because he's undisputed champion at 168, that not too tough fight has to be against one of his mandatories because he wants to remain undisputed. John Ryder becomes one of the mandatories based on his victory over Zach Parker. Therefore, not so tough, you know, compared to the others, David Benavidez being one of them. He's not going to fight Benavidez. No. He is going to fight John Ryder, and I think it's the perfect fight for both guys. You know, Ryder gets his opportunity against one of the best in the world, and a chance to be undisputed. He's got a good aggressive style. He has added some boxing, some head movement, some jabbing, some versatility to his game. He's not just a brawler. He's putting some brain power into his attack. I don't think that he's going to win, but as far as his chances of winning, he is the only person of 7 to 8 billion people in this world who is going to legally have the opportunity to step inside a ring and fight Canelo Alvarez for the undisputed super middleweight championship of the world. Rest of us have no chance because we are not professional boxers. We are not signed to, that's not what we do. He does. He's got a chance, theoretically, like Buster Douglas had a chance to fight Mike Tyson, like James Braddock had a chance to fight Max Baer, like all of the other great upsets, Cassius Clay against Sonny Liston, Andy Ruiz against Anthony Joshua. Anything can happen in boxing. I don't anticipate it happening here, but you never know, right? This is boxing.
That's it. That's why they fight. That's why they fight.
Yep.
Hey, so Errol Spence was involved in a car accident on Saturday. Spence was on, I guess he was Instagramming live from, like, the scene. So he just got out and did an Instagram or whatever. Apparently the guy who hit him was, like, 14 or something. He was underage, didn't have a license, this and that. Hit him head on, I think it was. I thought it was head on.
That's what they said.
Yeah. And he complained of a leg injury during his Instagram Live. Anybody hear any more news on that? I couldn't find anything else on that, whether he was, like, really injured or just kind of hurt or what the deal was.
I heard there wasn't any serious injuries, but I don't know. I didn't get any firsthand information. I just heard rumors.
Yeah,
over the internet. No, I haven't even actually read any articles on it or anything.
No, do you hear anything?
The initial report or impressions or things that I saw on internet indicated that this 14-year-old took his parents' vehicle and he drove off and ran a red light and hit Spence head on, and it was a good thing that Spence was in an SUV. It's a very strong and sturdy car. Could have been a lot worse. Now this is his third car accident.
Yeah.
And you know, if I was Errol Spence, and it wasn't even his fault this time. it was not his fault. He was okay. He was the victim of bad, wrong place at wrong time.
Yeah.
And but still, you know, get somebody to drive you around, please, please.
Yeah.
You can afford it, I hope. And we just want to see him recover, get his health back, get back into training, get a fight scheduled, make some money for his family, and hopefully we will see the big one coming up very, very soon, soon as possible. That's all you can really say about that is, you know, we just hope that he'll be okay.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's you never want to see. I mean, he's had, like you said, three accidents already. So, I mean, hire a driver, like you said. I mean, that's the best thing he can do right now. You know,
yeah.
And it's and you know, listen, man. Leash Max just said it was just bad luck. Yeah, I get that. But this is three accidents. You've been involved in three accidents. Listen, man, it's time. You know, I don't care if it's bad luck or not. Whatever, it's your luck. So get somebody to drive you. You know, so. So, Black Prime, okay, the guys who sponsored the hand down. They sponsored the who were promoted the was it Terrence Crawford fight last night. Let me tell you what, I don't know how many views they got on the Terrence Crawford fight, but they hired a superstar, and he gave a press conference last night. Adrian Broner is fighting for Black Prime, and Adrian Broner, from what I understand, is focused as ever. He gave up his OnlyFans account. He's no longer performing on there. He is now dedicated strictly to boxing, and he will face Ivan Redkach, on February 18th in Atlanta. Beeb, Black Prime's about ready to blow up. You're buying that fight, right?
Nope.
Talking about it.
Not buying it.
Come on.
I watched it on ESPN the day after.
Titletown.
I know.
You mean you know? You know, you know. Lee, what do you think about Adrian Broner signing with Black Prime?
It's a good thing that he's getting back into the boxing ring, considering his rather – his record speaks for itself outside the ring. He's had his problems, let's put it that way. The thing that struck me was he looked like he was a light heavyweight. And he is signing for a fight in February. I would like to know what the weight class is. It going to be at 154? Is it going to be at 147? I don't think it's going to be at 140. There's no way.
Did you see him at the conference? Did you see him at the presser? He looked good.
There was a picture of him standing up at the announcement, and it looked like he had a bit of a gut on him.
That's to put it
quite a bit.
Right.
For a guy like, you know, we're not used to seeing Adrian Broner like that.
Right.
So we shall see if he can make the weight. That's the first battle. Ivan Redkach is kind of a notorious character himself. The last time I saw him fight was against Regis Prograis on a Triller card. And let's just say he put together an Oscar-worthy performance. He gets hit